Okay. So I was just saying that it's kind of hard to fit into the shoes of Mary Rose from last week. She did an amazing job. I hope you get a chance to listen to it online. For those who didn't hear it, or obviously who were not here, you know, she literally focused on the historic aspects of poverty, war, sickness, some of the devastating aspects of humanity and mankind, and you know, following through with what are some of the things that contribute to the suffering of the world, and so I'm following through in that vein, but I am also following through in the sense that you know, bringing a science of mind spin to it as well, in terms of the suffering. Now, part of what Mary Rose spoke about is a lot of what has been written in the chapter, The World Has Suffered Enough. And it was very good to kind of go back in history a little bit myself and figure out, you know, where do we as maybe religious science or new thought movement, where do we fit into the world of suffering, sort of. Don't expect too much from me, because I am not a huge researcher. If you ask questions during our group time, I would defer to either Google or one of you bright souls here to get the answers, all right? So part of, you know, one of the things I was looking at was a blog from Harv Bishop. I think he's a science of mind blogger, but he's also a social justice person type of, you know, he literally, you know, puts himself out there and talks about the suffering that people go through, you know, whether it's ethnic or racial or poverty or anything like that. And he went back, he did the research and realized that part of Ernest Holmes' movement, or part of Ernest Holmes' involvement, I should say, was that Ernest Holmes literally was somewhat of a social justice person in some ways. We never, and this is why he wrote this blog, because I think he was talking to Ken Gordon, and Ken Gordon probably said, well, we never use the term social justice, but then he kind of went back and said, well, we never use the term cell phone, but everybody uses the term cell phone. Right? And so it's like implied that it was all about social justice. But Ernest Holmes really was a big part of sort of trying to eradicate poverty. And, you know, he was, although he focused a lot on spiritual mind treatment, which was the basis for improving our thoughts and holding on to an affirmative type of lifestyle, as you know, and we have, you know, as me, to me, through me, as me, something like that. But in terms of what Ernest Holmes was, the affirmative aspect of it was, you know, he wasn't presenting us humanity as victims of the environment, victims of the lifestyle, but instead the affirmative aspect was, okay, let's change our thinking about what we are going through and see if we can change our environment. So Mr. Bishop, and I agree with Mr. Bishop, he kind of gave Ernest Holmes a ding a little bit. Don't strike me down, okay? Gave Ernest Holmes a ding by saying, and when I read the statement, that, you know, sometimes he was blaming the poor for being poor in some ways, where, you know, people weren't trying to move into a different state of thinking. And sometimes, you know, it's tough to blame people for something that maybe they are not aware of at the time. I always have and will continue to carry that statement that when or if I know to do differently, I will. Mm-hmm. And I come from that space of empowerment that if I know something to be better for me, why is it that I'm going to go back into that state? Unless there is some, obviously using mental terms, some depressive aspects or some, you know, psychological or pathological things that might be holding people back. All right, so he said, Ernest Holm, blame the poor for poverty. So that's part of it. But he also went on to talk about how he empowered, Ernest Holmes empowered the poor by literally putting, you know, clear affirmative prayer out there and did his best to explain. He also was a big part of, he called it the what precedent is there in the work of Holmes for New Thought Mission to consider the collective good as well as opportunity for individuals to improve their lives? And he said, Holmes' position on social issues is often more implicit than explicit. And so we turn to examples that Holmes had, which he has set in support of racial equality, including famous incidents in different types of Science of Mind writings that he had done in the magazine. So part of his process was about linking with other people. For example, which I didn't know, I don't know if you've ever heard of Frank B. Robinson. So Frank B. Robinson was, he was the founder of a movement called Psychiana. Have you ever heard of Psychiana? Psychiana. So I'm just going to read this. In 1941, just before America entered World War II, Science of Mind founder Ernest Holmes teamed up with Frank B. Robinson, leader of a dynamic positive mind religion called Psychiana, to host a series of Los Angeles prayer meetings celebrating the values of freedom and rallying morale for the war on fascism. That's my tongue twister today. All right. So so one known photograph survives from the event, which Robinson calls the American Spiritual Awakening, calls it the American Spiritual Awakening. It shows Holmes and Robinson smiling at each other across the stage at the Philharmonic Auditorium in Los Angeles. It was into a crowded, packed room of 3,500 as they looked on. And so part of Robinson's blanket statement was, I believe in the power of the living God. And so the both of them kind of got together one day in 1941. I think the war, just before the war, World War II, I think. And they were trying to rally people against the war. So the integrated rallies, which occurred across 5 days, were a stark anomaly at a time when most mainline churches remained segregated. A columnist, well, I won't go there. So during a period when ethnic hatred and fascist ideology were plunging nations into war, the message of plurality that pervades the surviving transcripts of Robinson and Holmes' mission was stirring. So Holmes opened the whole meeting, the 5-day meeting, and this is a little bit of what Holmes had to say. Dr. Robinson calls his work Psychiana, which means bringing spiritual power to the world. I happen to belong to a movement called Religious Science, which means the same thing. Some of you may go to a Jewish synagogue, you may be a Methodist, Baptist, Catholic, but there is but one God. We meet here today not on a theological background, but upon the foremost of a spiritual conception, the common meeting ground of every race, every creed, every color, every philosophy, and every religion on the face of the earth. That's my Ernest Holmes. I love Ernest Holmes. And so Ernest Holmes always called his congregation or his people beloved. And so when Robinson was talking to his church the next day, the next week or whenever, he mimicked Holmes' words. He said, "Now, beloved, when the Almighty created the human race, he created black, white, yellow, and every color which exists on earth in one creation. He did not make three or four special jobs of creation, nor did he make several different attributes, one for each nation. No, he made them all flesh and blood, every human soul, and that every human soul that has ever lived on the face of the earth. We are all brothers, regardless of our religious affiliations, our race, our nationality, etc., etc." Now, this is the columnist whose name is Mitch Horowitz, and this is his statement, and he said, and this is obviously separate from it, but he said, "Anne Robinson's statement seems sadly necessary to gaze back on today as Donald J. Trump and other GOP hopefuls vilify Muslims, immigrants, Syrian refugees, dividing the nation from its most hallowed ideals, all for the sake of a few points in the polls." And here is where I move backwards to say, and following in Abraham's view, that we allow, even though we are not thinking, we allow, we are in this space, in this time, for the contrast of where we go next. We are always, and I'm using Abraham again because that is, they are so vivid in my memory right now, that we are always, and it's very difficult to even explain or understand or even share, but I truly believe that in every contrast, every difficult thing, every suffering, that we are calling forth a newness of life. This is where your newness comes in. So we are calling forth a newness of life. We are on the leading edge of something new all the time. And regardless of what happens now in our politics, I believe that it is sharpening our instincts, sharpening our fervor, sharpening who we are, sharpening our wanting of what we really want. So far, everything, and that's what I put in my email, everything has brought us to the point of the suffering that we don't want, the pain and the poverty and the wars that we don't want. So what it is we do want, and guess what? We know that very clearly, right? If you ask people what they want, a lot of us are going to say peace. We want calm. We want a feeling that we are all together, that we are a community, that we are belonging. And is it that we don't have it? If we didn't have it, we couldn't ask for something that we wanted, right? So we have it, and we probably have that maybe blocked out because of the pain and the suffering that goes along with it. Anyhow, so that's part of the history of my little research aspect of it. Within the research, I realized that the National Cemetery Administration, they only allow certain emblems, what you would call these, symbols, to be placed on headstones in the National Cemetery. and I'll pass this around so you'll see if your belief system is in here. But I was happy to see the science of mind symbol.
Wow. All right.
Oh, nice.
Science of mind symbol is one of the accepted religious symbols that the national government of the National Cemetery Association Administration has declared is quite valid. So with that, how much more time do I have? So with that, let me just quickly go into the world has suffered enough. And this is Ernest Holmes' sort of spin on where we are. So part of it, he says, we must know definitely and consistently that the universe is for us and not against us. Does that give you goosebumps, right? Because in some ways we are saying we are fighting among ourselves to naught, to nothing. Why the fighting when we are in a space of literal perceived harmony? A harmony that we haven't yet figured out, haven't yet come into alignment with. But Ernest Holmes is already stating that surely if God or the universal intelligence is imbued with goodness, then it could not ordain that man, it could not ordain that man should ultimately be other than a perfect expression of life. So we are perfect expressions of life, and life in itself cannot be against itself. A house cannot be against its own self. Life can only beget life. Life can only spring forth more life. I'm liking the word leading edge again. Life can only push us into a higher sense of alignment and movement into where we need to be. It's our own leading edge. It's why Holly is saying, this is where I am feeling that I am being pushed to, or this is where I want to express myself. This is life begetting more life in you, making you bigger, making all of us bigger. And we, of course, would benefit from listening to your most amazing voice, even expanding our own well-being as such, all right? So we shall have to learn that evil is neither person, place, or thing of itself, but it is an experience which we are allowed to have because of our divine individuality. Now, some of you might say, what? Allowed? I did not choose suffering. And many times I have told myself that. Many, many times. I did not choose this. But in looking back, I don't know how else I would have moved to where I am now. I don't know how else I would have understood more clearly that the contrast or the pain or the suffering or, Ernest says evil, or the evil that I experience would have clarified my mind, my thoughts to where I am. And so he said, but it is an experience which we are allowed to have because of our divine individuality. So, going under Abraham, and I don't know if everybody knows what Abraham, I cannot clearly explain it, so Connie can at the end. You know Abraham, right? Okay, so part of what Abraham says is that we choose our existence. Some people choose to quickly come in and go out. Say, change my mind. I'll choose another existence. Some people choose to create an existence that is going to continue to clarify their beingness and their value to humanity. Some people come in for others in order to be martyrs for others. And these are my words. These are not Abraham's. And so I more clearly understand that sometimes we allow, sometimes we allow suffering, or we are in the contrast of suffering, so that life moves on, life becomes richer, bigger. All right, if a man takes his image of thought only from his previous experiences, then he continues in the bondage which those experiences create. Right? So if we keep looking back at the suffering, if we keep looking back at our pain, if we keep focusing in on war and poverty and suffering and what else is there that causes the world to suffer, then that's the only picture we're going to continue to see until we change our image, our thought process about what we truly want to see, and be that change, live that change, have a change in our thought processes that's going to move me forward. So he continues to say that if we talk about discord, we shall become more discordant. Yeah, right? And when we become discordant, it is a vibration within us that truly doesn't feel good. A discordant vibration causes isolation, causes anger, it causes a painful interaction with others, and most of all, it's very discordant with who we are. That's why it's discordant. If we couldn't understand discordance, if we understand discordance, that means we understand what is the opposite of discord. And that's where we are trying to get back to that space of, what's the opposite of discord?
Concordance.
Connie said concordance, Holly said being aligned. So if we don't want discordance, we want concordance, we want alignment with ourselves. How powerful. But we could not appreciate and know that we wanted alignment unless we were discorded. And that is the, catch 22. That is the suffering, pain, that is the all the stuff that we are going through, the contrast, as they call that, all right? And so the more the world arms for war, the more certain it is that there will be war. Holy, right? Eventually, we shall understand that all human bondage is an invention of ignorance. And so this is where I come back to where I said, if I truly know to do something right or something that would benefit me, then it's out of ignorance that I would have done something, all right? So I think once you've gotten, I'm using my word again, leading edge, once you've gotten to the leading edge, I don't think you can go back. You can always move forward. Or unless something has happened to totally cause discordance again and cause memory lapse or loss of connection. You can never be not connected. But alignment. Unless something happens, then we just cannot go back. I tell people when I work with them that, hey, this is new information for you. I tell my patients, I said, you're hearing this maybe for the first time, you're in agreement with it, I see your face light up, I look at their faces and I see the difference in their faces. And I say, guess what? If tomorrow comes and you do this same thing without attaching those coping skills, it's a choice. Before, it may be ignorance and you're waddling around in ignorance. But moving forward, you know it, you know that it works, it's a choice. And so choices have repercussions, obviously, right? So if we want to stay in war, and we already know that war begets war, then it's our choice to stay in war. But however, because war causes such discordant feelings, our choice is to receive something new and something different and to be in concordance and alignment. So in closing, I just want to share, has so many good, everybody, please, and I'm saying this for everybody online, please read the general summary of the Science of Mind book if you never even got to finish reading the entire book. This is my second book, and the first one I kind of gave up on because it's all the pages are falling out. But oh my goodness, it is the most amazing thing. You're going to drool because of it. So there was a part about. So it has so many little things. I didn't get the real one, but one of the good things that I made a note of was when we treat. We should be specific. Whatsoever things we desire, when we pray, we should believe that we have them. If we wish money, we should ask for it. Or mentally, accept money. If we wish a home, this is bad now for me. If we wish a home, we should ask for it. Or mentally accept a home. We can put as much detail into our mental work as we desire. Sometimes to do so will be of great service in gaining a complete mental acceptance of our desires. This is the whole secret, a complete mental acceptance and embodiment of our desires. And the mental acceptance of what we want to see and feel in our world is at our fingertips. Everybody may see peace differently. How do I see peace? And how do I contribute what I have embodied and want to see in the world? How do I put that into the space of the leading edge, or the all-knowing, or the future image of peace? Then Felicia would come with her image of peace, and wow, she blows the world away. But then I get to be part of yours, because I'm already in that alignment of peace. Peace, peace, peace. Val, you've already put that out into the world. You've made me a bigger person because I always think of what you say. And Connie, of course, the mystic of all. You've put everything out there, right? Holly, Bethany, David, you have your specific types of how you want to show forth in the world. What is it that I'm putting out there that I would like to see reciprocated into my space, into my world? So just to let you know that we should be careful to distinguish daydreaming and wishful thinking from reality. And when we treat, we do not wish, we know. We do not dream, we state. We do not hope, we accept. We do not pray, we announce. Oh. How cool is that?
Nice.
We announce. We do not expect something is going to happen. We believe that it has already happened. Amen.
Amen.
And so it is.
Thanks.
So when we come back, we're going to do round table on the the Science of Mind Global Vision, a world that works for everyone. Thank you so much. Thank you.